Welcome to Advanced Nuclear, the official podcast of UCAN Power, where leading experts, innovators, and policymakers explore the latest developments shaping the future of nuclear energy.
Welcome to the Advanced Nuclear Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Howe, on behalf of the United Coalition for Advanced Nuclear Power. This podcast is all about the new nuclear technologies that can power our growing society while also bolstering our national energy security. In previous episodes, we've talked to thought leaders and industry risk takers who are bringing innovative new nuclear technologies to market. But where does government fit in? When one thinks of government's role in nuclear power, they usually think federal, the Department of Energy, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Congress, the Commerce and State Department offices that promote American nuclear technologies overseas. All this is well and good and extremely essential. But the states play an important and growing role in the resurgence of nuclear power in our nation, and in this episode, we want to shine a light on that. Today, we're joined by Kirsten Verklas and Kelsey Jones of the NASAO, the National Association of State Energy Officials, a leading nonprofit organization that represents the state-level energy offices across our land. Our guests today bring a wealth of talent and experience with them. Kirsten is NASAO's Senior Managing Director and leads their electricity program, working with states on generation, transmission, distribution, and grid resilience issues. She's worked at the Department of Energy, several other organizations, and has master's degrees in international relations and energy policy and climate. Kelsey is a program manager at NASAO, where she's deeply involved in nuclear policy issues. As you'll hear, NASAO is doing some exciting work when it comes to nuclear deployments, and that's the focus of our conversation today. Kelsey's got a great background for this work with an advanced degree from George Washington University in environmental resource policy, and with time spent at America's leading nuclear trade association, the Nuclear Energy Institute. So Kirsten and Kelsey, we're grateful that you could join us on Advanced Nuclear. Welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks for having us, Jim.
All right, Kirsten, we're going to start with you. We want to learn a little bit more about NASAO. What's the main role of the organization? You know, how many of the American states and territories are members?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So NASAO is the only national nonprofit association for the governor-designated energy officials, and our members range from all 50 states, the five territories, and the District of Columbia. And we were formed by the states in 1986, and the organization really facilitates the peer learning among state energy offices, the directors, and their staff. It serves as a resource for and about the state energy offices, and then also advocates for the interests of the state energy offices to Congress and the federal agencies.
So a lot of people might not realize that every state has its own energy office. And the question I've got is, are these all kind of structured the same way, or are they cookie cutter, or is a lot of variance between the different states and how their energy offices are organized and what they handle for issues?
Yeah, like every 50 states, they're all different. And so all the state energy offices and all the states, the territories, and the District of Columbia are also very different. Not two of them are alike. We like to say at NASAO that if you know one state energy office, you know one state energy office. And they're very different. We have very large ones, like, for example, from New York or California. And we have smaller energy offices with less staff. They also are not all in the same structure. Some of them are within an agency, like the Department of Commerce or an Environmental Protection Agency. And some of them are their own state agency. So they really range in size, scope, and location within the state. And they all each also reflect the energy priorities of each of their governors and the legislatures. But in general, what they have in common is that they inform and develop energy policies in support of their governors and the legislations in each state. They really do help to open markets for innovative energy technology, such as advanced nuclear. They typically lead energy emergency planning, and they support energy-related economic development. And they also all work really closely together with industry and the private sector, investors, utilities, both consumer-owned utilities as well as investor-owned utilities. And they all prioritize really this economic development in each state. They generally work under the director of the governor or legislator. They're usually funded by state and federal appropriations. And most state energy offices advise their governors and legislatures, with many state energy offices actually serving as the governor's energy advisor. Many of them also develop state energy plans, which are sort of comprehensive energy plans that provide a strategy for each state on how to meet future energy needs and what sort of the energy landscape is in each state. And one of the things they also have in common is that one of their key funding sources is the U.S. State Energy Program, or SEP. And that is a formula grant that is provided by the U.S. Congress and then administered by DOE. And it's really critical to supporting the state energy office's work. And looking at nuclear, many states have leveraged this SEP funding to support their nuclear activities. For example, Indiana utilized SEP funds to support a recent study on small modular reactors and their impact on Indiana. And so the study looked at looking at the importance of Indiana conducting feasibility studies for advanced nuclear, how they can build partnerships, and prioritize stakeholder engagement. And then the report went on to say that Indiana should develop additional educational resources, review existing state requirements, explore supply chain resources, and kind of look at ways to de-risk some of the constructions of small modular reactors, for example, by utilizing existing coal plants.
And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. That's very helpful. But how does NAZIO interact with the Department of Energy? Is there one specific node that you're talking to, or is it across all the program offices?
Yeah, so we at NAZIO, and together with the State Energy Office, really work closely with DOE across all offices. All our state energy offices work on a number of different energy topics. So we engage with all offices across DOE, trying to elevate state priorities and perspectives, and particularly around the importance of energy development, affordability, and reliability. Really across, I would say, all energy sectors, fields, grid edge, grid, end use, transportation, buildings, etc. We have formal partnerships with several offices within DOE to develop resources that are useful to the states and the state energy offices. We engage with DOE on meetings and convenings, as well as providing technical assistance to the state energy offices. And that is on a number of topics. We have worked with DOE on electricity system and grid modernization, nuclear energy, solar, energy storage, energy security, resilience, building energy efficiency, financing, workforce development. I think there's not a topic where NAZIO and DOE haven't engaged on.
Very helpful. And how about with Congress? You know, you've got more than 50 members for NAZIO. That must be pretty impressive just to watch you come to consensus on issues. How does that come to play? How do you come to consensus then? How do you work with Congress on these things?
Yeah, so NAZIO has a committee structure that is comprised of states and the private sector partners that we are engaged with. And they help develop potential policy positions for consideration by NAZIO's board of directors. And that board includes two state energy directors from each of six regions and a six-member executive committee. And our current chair is actually the state energy director from Tennessee. And so we work with Congress really kind of similarly as we are working with DOE. And we seek to elevate the state priorities and perspectives to members of Congress, and then provide recommendations and comments on proposed legislation and other federal actions. And for anybody who wants to know more about the specific policy issues that we have engaged Congress on or that our board has looked at, I invite you to visit our policy page on NAZIO's website that highlights some of those different policy positions and actions.
All right. Well, thank you. So, Kelsey, over to you. Let's talk a little bit more about the nuclear side of things. You know, NAZIO's portfolio, obviously, as Kirsten just pointed out, covers a whole broad range of energy forms and that sort of thing. How has the focus on nuclear been? Is it steady? Is it growing? Is it decreasing? How would you characterize that?
Yeah, thanks, Jim, for the question. It's definitely a large portfolio, as Kirsten mentioned. And since we are a membership organization representing the state and territory energy offices, our goals and objectives are really to meet the needs and priorities of all 56 state and territories. And as you know, every state has very different policy and energy goals, so we really want to provide information and resources on all forms and types of energies to support states as they meet these different goals. But when it comes to nuclear, there's always been strong interest from the states in nuclear as a reliable and clean baseload power source. But while interest in nuclear technologies has been growing across the country, I certainly see NASIO's focus growing in tandem to meet state needs and interest. So as I mentioned, you know, state energy offices really recognize increasing demand for clean, reliable power from industry, from data centers, and other sectors, and see that nuclear will have a really important role to play alongside other energy sources. So as a membership organization, we will be a resource for states as they explore ways to incorporate advanced nuclear reactors into their programs, policies, and planning work, and really help them better understand the intersections with other key issues, as I mentioned, data center build-out, industry, and beneficial electrification.
So NASIO has done a lot of work with NARUC, the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners. You formed an advanced nuclear state collaborative, which is terrific. You also produce a comprehensive listing, it's on your website, of state-level nuclear energy initiatives. Talk more about your collaboration with NARUC and what trends the two of you are seeing when it comes to states, when it comes to these pro-nuclear initiatives in the states.
Yeah, happy to chat about that. NASIO has a really great and long-standing relationship with NARUC, as well as the other national state organizations like the National Governors Association. But specifically with NARUC, we work to support and bring together the state energy offices and the public utility commissions on a variety of energy issues. These range from load growth, microgrids, building energy efficiency, and more recently we've launched our nuclear energy collaborative. And these partnerships and activities are both formal and informal partnerships, but overall we see a lot of value in bringing both that sort of policy and programmatic lens of the state energy offices and the regulatory perspective of the commissions together at one table. But specifically thinking about the NASIO-NARUC Advanced Nuclear State Collaborative you mentioned, this is designed to convene state utility regulators, state energy officials, and outside invited experts from the federal government, from industry, from the labs, from community organizations to exchange questions, needs, and challenges related to the planning and deployment of new advanced nuclear generation. And we really see this as an avenue for states to share information and learn from one another on the steps needed to facilitate deployment. And I'll quickly touch on a few of the reports we've released. I know we'll talk in more detail on one later in the discussion, but we've released materials on coal-to-nuclear repowering, innovative use cases for advanced nuclear, and we also have a report under development that should be released sometime next month, walking through the process for states to develop state nuclear frameworks. And this will really be designed as a guidance document for states on the process for actually developing one of these strategic framework documents. We found that they're really helpful resources for states to get a really consolidated understanding of their policy and regulatory landscape, understand who the key stakeholders are, what potential barriers and challenges to deploying nuclear exist in the state, and to fully outline recommendations for the legislature and governor on next steps. And these frameworks also are important signals to the private sector that a state has done some of the critical initial prep work and are ready to take next steps. And I'll just wrap up quickly here by saying that we also hold annual site visits and workshops together with NARUC on advanced nuclear, most recently in Charlotte this month. And we also manage a state activity tracker that provides an overview of advanced nuclear activities across state government offices. So this tracker will highlight any nuclear-related activity that has a state touch point, whether that's an executive order or a project announcement, a new policy, a report. So we definitely recommend taking a look to see the wide range of activities states are leading. It's been really exciting to see how frequently we've needed to make updates to the map, but there's been a lot of new reports and working groups and announcements from the state on a weekly, if not daily, basis.
So you mentioned one of the reports I'd just like to learn a little bit more about, because it's an issue that really has been in at the forefront of the conversation about nuclear, resurgence here in America. And that is, repurposing, old and abandoned coal site, coal power generation, or ones that are, phasing out of existence. So you produced the report on coal to nuclear repowering for state energy offices and public utility commissions. Can you just talk about what the findings were from that report?
Yes, happy to. And we've found that this topic continues to be a big priority for states and try to target those relevant topics in our materials through the collaborative. But for this specific report, the impetus is around increasing coal plant closures related to economic viability and states' interest in meeting different environmental and economic development goals. So they've been really interested in exploring opportunities and better understanding how to use existing infrastructure and workforce located at the sites of retiring or retired coal power plants to potentially host small modular reactors. And so this report, it highlights the benefits and challenges associated with the coal to nuclear repowering process with a particular lens on the policy, programmatic, and regulatory considerations relevant to states. And so I'll touch on a few examples. We touch on the benefits of utilizing existing infrastructure, economic development opportunity for local communities, reliability, and emissions reduction. And so one piece we found related to redeveloping and remediating coal sites is that it does leave a lot of valuable assets for an SMR to repurpose, including grid interconnection, waterways, sewage systems, roadways, equipment. And we do reference a lot of existing studies and work, including some feasibility studies that the state energy offices have supported on coal to nuclear. So I'll just quickly share that one of the examples we highlight comes from the state of Virginia. They outlined three categories of equipment that could be reused at coal facilities in their state, which include transmission, switchyard, and office buildings, heat sink infrastructure, and steam cycle components. And they found that some of the biggest cost savings would actually come from the existing transmission interconnection, as new transmission lines can cost upwards of $3 million a mile, and there's a lot of planning and landowner challenges. So overall, the state found a lot of good opportunities to reuse some of those sites. And then we did also look at some of the challenges associated with coal to nuclear repowering, which are related to cost, timing. There is a lot of interest in utilizing existing workforce, but what does the timeline actually look like for training and preparing that existing workforce from the coal fleets to support SMRs? Also, projects will need to look at public opinion, regulations, and spent fuel. And here we look at one of the feasibility studies that the state of Maryland did on coal to nuclear, and they did outline a potential project schedule for repowering a coal site with one of the X-Energy SMRs, and according to their analysis, they found that it would take somewhere around 8 to 10 years from the first stage of site-specific engineering to actually having a unit that was built and operational. And then I'll just wrap up by saying that one of the big interest areas that we've been exploring with the states around coal to nuclear looks at early site permits and opportunities with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
Well, it's interesting because the coal plants, they don't come just one size fits all. They are various, power outputs. The good news is when you look at the advanced reactors that are coming to market, they also have a very wide range, everything from the little micro reactors, 1 megawatt electric, all the way up to well over 300. And of course, you've got, if you really want to go big, you've got AP1000s, size gigawatt scale reactors that can be built. So it's great to see that you're thinking through these things. And I really commend our listening audience to go to NSAO's website and check out this report. It's very well done, and it's crisp and to the point, and you can get through it and learn a lot pretty quickly. But you've got another initiative right now that's really got us intrigued. I know it's early on, so we don't want to get into too much detail. It's probably still being formulated, but it's the Advanced Nuclear First Movers Initiative. This is a NASAO initiative. Why was this created and what's it designed to do?
Yeah, thanks for that. We're really excited about the First Movers Initiative, and it's been getting a lot of positive attention and outreach. So happy to share a little bit more information with you and also seek to clarify a little bit the difference between this initiative and our activity with NARUC that I walked through earlier. But the First Movers is really a state-led activity, and as you mentioned, we are keeping some of the specifics under wraps for the time being with the hope that more information will be available publicly in the coming months. But we did have our first full group meeting earlier this month, and I think it reflected a lot of the momentum and enthusiasm for moving quickly towards really action-oriented outcomes. So just for some quick background, the First Movers is a joint effort between both our organization, NASIO, as well as Idaho National Lab, Oak Ridge National Lab, and the Gateway for Accelerated Innovation in Nuclear. So we're really grateful for the support of the labs and GAIN in providing technical assistance and support for the First Movers. But what this will look like specifically is it's designed to be a public-private initiative, which is a key difference between this and the NASIO-NARUC effort, which is very state-focused and education-driven. This will be a public-private activity to support state energy offices with achieving near-term advanced nuclear development actions. And it was really called for and supported by all of the state governors. They are committed to advanced nuclear development and see this state-led activity as a unique opportunity for state governments to get together with utilities, developers, financial institutions, investors, different end users, to both have conversations about their needs, but also to make more formal commitments to invest in advanced nuclear project development.
Right, and it's interesting that you've got a pretty wide variety of states here. You've got five co-chairs, I believe it is, Tennessee, Kentucky, Wyoming, but two of them really stand out a little bit, New York and Indiana. Indiana is not a nuclear state right now. They've got some nuclear manufacturing there, but no nuclear active nuclear plants. Is this a harbinger of things to come? Is this a good news story that we have, great states like Indiana now kind of jumping on the nuclear bandwagon?
Yeah, so we do have 11 states committed to participating in the group, and as I mentioned, the states are really leading this initiative, so it reflects strong enthusiasm and commitment all the way up to the governor's and state legislative level. But all of the states participating do have that backing from their governor to work in partnership with other states and invest a lot of time and resources to be first movers. And so, in general, interest in advanced nuclear, particularly with the emergence of small modular reactors, has been evolving significantly. But we do see an overall strong recognition that growing power demand means examining a wide range of innovative energy solutions. And I'll defer to the individual states on their policy direction, but we do see, as you mentioned, interest from states who have no existing nuclear in being first movers. States that have existing nuclear but are interested in working with other states. So there's a lot of strong momentum and enthusiasm pushing this initiative forward.
And so you've got 11 states involved. Is that kind of capped out now, or will other states join in later, do you think?
Yeah, so at this time, the group will be capped at 11. The states that are participating are very they acknowledge the value of having a small, focused group committed to actionable outcomes, and there is regional and bipartisan diversity among the states. So there's been strong commitments from those 11. And we are looking at opening up an observer role for states who may see themselves as sort of fast followers of the 11. So the observer states will get to participate in certain calls, they can review materials, and engage in an in-person workshop we're holding this fall with the hope that the observer states can learn from the initial group and hopefully replicate successes and models in their own states.
Understand. That sounds like a really wise thing to do. So thanks for sharing that. Now, I know you can't get into too much detail here, but what sort of tangible actions do you think you might end up undertaking without getting too specific here? What can this initiative do just in the real world to help move things forward?
Yeah, so thanks for the question and really excited to talk through some of the actions we're thinking about. But this is a really a state-driven exercise, and the states participating have all committed to several near-term tangible actions that are being formulated on the back end and hopefully can be shared soon. But while we are working on that exact order book and prioritization, happy to share some of the general items we'll be focusing on and hoping to accomplish. And we are starting to sketch out a timeline and vision for these different items based on near term and then 3, 6, and 12 month timelines. So that will look different when we will be achieving these different milestones, but happy to share some of our initial priorities and long term goals. So first up, similar to the Indiana study that Kirsten referenced earlier, we will be working with all of the states to do some detailed site screening and analysis to help the states better understand any potential siting roadblocks and demonstrate to the private sector that the 11 states do have a number of potential sites in mind to meet different use cases or technology needs. And this will also help pave the way for some of the early site permitting work that we'll be exploring. So we've been in conversations with some of the existing nuclear screening tools like STAND or ORSAGE to see how we can best leverage their screening categories and GIS data to do some analysis for each of the 11 states. We also recognize that this can't be done with just the states. We need to bring in industry, utilities, and the private sector to have conversations on applicable technologies and different use cases. And so we really want to foster partnerships among states and the private sector. And this may look like an MOU around a certain technology design or use case, but there is still a discussion among the states on what those partnerships and agreements will actually look like. We'll also be making recommendations to the Department of Energy, the Loan Programs Office, and the NRC related to topics like early site permitting, innovative financing mechanisms. The states and NASIO really recognize that federal engagement and support will be critical for these states and for the First Movers Initiative to have overall success. We're also looking at ways that states can innovatively use those state energy program funds that Kirsten mentioned earlier to catalyze private sector investment and support some of that initial siting and screening activities, as well as ultimate RD&D. Those funds are very flexible, and we want to make sure states are able to leverage them to support these nuclear activities. And then some sort of general ideas that we have been tossing around relate to compiling educational resources and best practices on public engagement and community outreach, looking at international convenings and coordination. There's a lot of lessons to be learned from our neighbors in Canada as well as in Asia and Europe. So we are exploring opportunities to get international governments and private sector partners to the table with the First Movers to discuss strategies and share ideas. We'll also be looking at implementing public-private financial partnerships and procurement agreements. And then overall, a theme that will be woven throughout this initiative is innovative supply chain, economic development, and workforce, and how best states can work together to support those activities and make sure that the workforce and the supply chain is in place for these projects to be developed and operated successfully.
So that's a lot. You guys are really doing the soup to nuts routine here, it sounds like to me. So that's terrific. But two of the issues you just kind of mentioned, actually one of them, and that leads to the second issue, is the private sector financing. I think we've at UCAN have come to realize that, the federal government and especially the state governments, there's never going to be enough money, taxpayer money, that we can just throw at advanced nuclear. It has to come from the private sector. And we've seen some great successes over the last just 18 months, really, where a lot of the large hyperscalers, the data center industry, who really are going to need a lot of this electricity as they grow their data center capacity, are throwing, I should say, are investing, you know, very wisely in advanced nuclear technologies. Amazon, Google, Microsoft, others. That's a really good thing. And that kind of goes to what I want to ask you about is, we've come to the conclusion at UCAN that, you know, single unit deployments of reactors is nice, but we really need to pivot pretty quickly to multi-unit commitments and fleet scale deployments. That allows the reactor developers to, you know, develop the robust supply chains they need to really reduce the lower, you know, per unit costs. You know, get over that hump of the first of a kind cost, get to nth of a kind cost. You know, do you kind of share that view that we need to kind of move, you know, as quickly as possible to bring in the private sector investment and then get to fleet scale deployments? Is that something that you think is on the right track?
Definitely. NASIO certainly recognizes the importance of public-private partnerships to advance new projects, particularly first of a kind projects, and recognize that private investment will be key to reducing financial risk for states and keeping project timelines on track. So through the First Movers, we plan to work really closely with key end users to identify potential partnerships. And we'll also focus on potential alignment around certain technologies to reduce risk and streamline the process going forward.
Super. So one more question about what you're looking at through the First Movers and is kind of associated, and that is the nuclear fuel supply chain. Is NASIO really looking at the domestic nuclear fuels industry? I know the federal government is. There's a lot of money being put into supporting domestic enrichment and other pieces of the fuel supply chain. Is that something that you're looking at as well?
Yeah, so thanks for the question. State energy offices do work really closely with their economic development and environmental counterparts, which will be a key relationship when exploring those supply chain and fuel conversations. So there's a lot of work underway among those state energy offices to think about how they can best work together to bolster a stronger domestic supply chain. And within the First Movers, we've been thinking about how the states can work together to support different pieces and aspects of the supply chain that can benefit the full group. But we do see that economic development and workforce opportunities associated with these new markets are critical and are of strong interest to the state energy offices. I'll just throw out two examples of state activities in this space. One is in Tennessee. They have their state nuclear fund that have been providing grants to different companies. One of those grants will help establish a facility for the manufacturing of centrifuge assemblies in the state, and another grant to a company focused on uranium enrichment. There's also a lot of interest in uranium mining in the state of Wyoming. So we do hope to navigate the best way to support the First Movers in particular in supporting the domestic nuclear fuel supply chain and those fuel industry questions.
So as we come to this end of this conversation, which has been really, really helpful, let's just shift gears a little bit. I know, Kelsey, earlier in your career, you studied the use of renewable energy to power cities in the Arctic region. What are your thoughts of using microreactors for electricity production in the remote Alaskan communities? And what about the Western Pacific, where you have a lot of small island nations? Do you believe that, you know, microreactors would be a viable solution for them?
Yes, definitely. And that's something a lot of our state members are interested in. And maybe I'll reference one of the NASIO-NARUC collaborations. We have an active microgrid state working group that supports state energy offices and public utility commissions in identifying and walking through some of the policy, regulatory, and programmatic considerations related to microgrid deployment. And especially in recent years, there's been a lot of interest in the potential for microgrids to support rural and remote communities to, you know, enhance resilience and reliability of these hard-to-reach communities and reduce the need for costly transmission upgrades. So we've been identifying some opportunities to have conversations on microreactors and behind-the-meter nuclear within that working group context. But yes, overall, I would say many states are looking for ways to replace or supplement diesel generators in rural and remote areas, and behind the meter and microreactors are of strong interest.
That's great to hear. And I can tell you, if you go back even 5, 6 years, these really weren't topics that many people were talking about. It was kind of almost science fiction-y, but you've got a number of really impressive young companies that have kind of sprung out of virtually nowhere that are well along in their development path for their advanced reactor technologies, many of them very small microreactors. And then you've got the big players like Westinghouse and others who are also developing the smaller reactors that can be used in these sort of remote communities. So that's very helpful. So I'd like to kind of open it up to both of you. What's the one thing you'd like our listeners to take away from this conversation? And Kirsten, if you would want to go first.
Sure, I would say that states are important. That is one thing we always like to stress, and that the state energy offices can really be kind of the direct point of contact or gateway, if you will, for the private sector and other stakeholders to really engage with states on the many pressing energy issues that we discussed and others, and as well as some of the solutions such as small nuclear reactors and other advanced nuclear solutions.
Kelsey, over to you.
Yeah, and I'll just quickly add that, the U.S. State Energy Program and state energy offices are critical and have a really important role in advancing new nuclear, as Kirsten mentioned. So if any of your listeners from the private sector or industry are interested in engaging with the first movers, we'd love to have a conversation with you all to see what potential partnerships or opportunities to collaborate there are. So please reach out.
Well, give us more. How can people learn more about NASIO and your nuclear-related initiatives? What's your website? Where should they go to?
Yeah, so we do have a public website where folks can register for our newsletter, and we also have a week ahead email that goes out once a week to share information on upcoming webinars or in-person events or new reports, and then our monthly newsletter that profiles exciting updates from the states. And so we encourage folks to sign up for those on our website. You can also find links to all of the reports we've talked about, the state action tracker, and other materials. And then we also have an affiliate program where states or non-state actors can join NASIO as partners and engage more closely with the states and participate in some of our state-only meetings and conversations.
Well, thanks to both of you for being here. You provided a lot of really useful information about NASIO and your work with the nuclear technology deployment. Hopefully, we can get you back on the show as the First Mover Initiative starts making announcements and makes major strides forward, and get a status update sometime in the future. But thanks again to both of you for being here.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, to all our listeners, thank you for taking the time to tune into this podcast. We at UCAN Power believe that advanced nuclear technologies are the key to powering the American economy in the years and decades ahead. If you feel the same or just want to learn more, please check us out on social media and at www.ucanpower.org. UCAN's blessed with a small but devoted staff, and our producer of this podcast, the effervescent Miss Kimberly, is the best in the business. Thanks to her and the entire UCAN Power team for making this show happen. Until next time, this is your host signing off with thanks to you for tuning in to the Advanced Nuclear Podcast.